Welcome back to another episode of the Neurological Disorder Podcast. I'm your host, Merdula Barthi, and I'm so excited to speak to Jennifer on today's episode. Jennifer has stiff person syndrome, which is a rare and progressive neurological disorder which causes stiffening in the muscles of the arms, legs, and trunk, which is your torso. This happens in the form of spasms or flares, where sudden noises, coldness, and emotional stress can trigger violent muscle spasms, which Jennifer described to be extremely painful. At a smaller level, everyone has a protein called GAD, also known as glutamic acid decarboxylase, in the central and peripheral nervous system. GAD helps produce a substance called GABA. GABA is very important to humans because it regulates our motor neurons, preventing unnecessary movements of our muscles and reducing motor neuron activity. However, individuals with stiff person syndrome have a high concentration of anti-GAD antibodies. What this means is that their body's own immune system attacks their GAD enzymes, causing their body to not produce sufficient GABA. This means their muscles cannot relax, and their motor neurons continuously fire, even when they're not supposed to. This causes these muscle spasms that Jennifer described because the muscles all of a sudden get tense, with no GABA to stop them. Scientists still don't know the cause of stiff person syndrome, but current research shows that it's the result of a faulty autoimmune response in the brain and spine. To diagnose stiff person syndrome, doctors will take a blood test that measures the levels of GAD antibodies, and people with stiff person syndrome will have high levels of GAD antibodies. People with stiff person syndrome will also often have other autoimmune diseases, as Jen describes, like type 1 diabetes and vitiligo, but further research must be done to determine the links between having stiff person syndrome and having these other autoimmune diseases. Stiff person syndrome is also pretty rare, with the disease affecting 1 or 2 people per million. But it is twice as likely to affect a female than male. Because of this, stiff person syndrome is harder to diagnose and often confused with other conditions, such as multiple sclerosis and Parkinson's, which is why it can take people with this condition over 5 years to get diagnosed, like Jennifer. Symptoms for stiff person syndrome start appearing in individuals between the ages of 30 and 60, and the main symptom is the muscle spasms, as I described before. As a result of these spasms, individuals may experience difficulty walking, shortness of breath if the spasms affect muscles in the chest, chronic pain, and hyperlordosis, which is when the lower back is severely curved due to muscle tightness. Sadly, there is no cure for SPS, but there are many treatment options that can help manage the symptoms and pain from the muscle spasms and slow the progression of the condition. Doctors usually first prescribe benzodiazepines, which are depressants that relieve muscle spasms. Plasmapheresis is also a viable treatment option, where blood is removed from your body, separated into cells and plasma containing antibodies, and the cells are put back in, ultimately removing harmful antibodies that cause SPS. Finally, IVIG therapy, or intravenous immunoglobulin, is used to treat SPS by collecting antibodies from the plasma of donors with a healthy immune system and injecting them into people with SPS who have an immune system that is attacking their own body. In today's episode, we talk about Jennifer's terrible experience with numerous arrogant doctors, ongoing research and advocacy efforts to educate more people about SPS and potentially find a cure, and what we, as a community, can do to help others with SPS feel more comfortable and safe. However, as a trigger warning, today's episode covers some heavy topics, such as suicide and mentions of names of specific addictive drugs. Now, I'm so excited to welcome Jennifer Trujillo to my podcast. Hi, Jen. How are you doing today?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm good, too. So could you tell me a bit about yourself and what you do for fun?
Well, I'm a mom of 6. I have 4 girls and 2 boys. So my youngest is 7 and my oldest is 18 and just graduated her senior year of high school.
Oh, you must be busy.
Very. I have my 4 youngest live with me and then my 2 oldest live in Wyoming, so I drove 19 hours to go to my daughter's graduation.
Wow, that's far.
It was quite a drive, yes.
I only have 1 sibling, so.
Yeah, I had a lot of siblings.
Do you have any summer plans this summer, now that your oldest are graduating?
Summer plans. We're trying to knock off some things on my bucket list. Before Stiff Person hit, what I did for fun is I sang. I was a semi-professional singer-songwriter, and I used to perform, you know, the national anthem on ESPN. I was in a band, had an album, and I was also a dual diagnosis psychology student. Wow. So I was doing all of that, taking care of the kids, and running a reptile rescue because we love animals.
Do you have any pets right now?
Right now we're down to 3 ducks, 5 turtles, 2 dogs, and 1 cat.
Wow, that's a lot. I'm scared of cats. Okay, so when did you get diagnosed with Stiff Person Syndrome, and do you have any stories about your diagnosis?
I did not get diagnosed until July 15th of 2020.
Wow.
It took me 5 years to get diagnosed, and that is because nobody knew what was going on or what was wrong with me. They kept saying it was psychosomatic and that I needed to see a psychiatrist, that I had too many kids, that, you know, there was just too much stress because my boys have neuromuscular disorders. And so a lot of my time was taking them to all of their doctor's appointments. And so a lot of doctors just ignored me. And it got to a point where they just told me to stop calling and stop sending in referrals and refused to help me. So I contacted the Rare Disease Association, and they gave me a list of specialists because one doctor out here did tell me that he thought it was either stiff person syndrome or a calcium channelopathy disorder. So I, after having a 6-hour-long stiff person attack, I contacted one of the doctors in Michigan, which is where some of my family's from, and he was able to get me in within 2 weeks. And I had an attack in front of him during our appointment, and he immediately diagnosed me with stiff person syndrome. And that's all it took.
I'm so sorry to hear about how it took that long for you to get diagnosed, and like the lengths you had to go through to get the medical professionals to believe you.
It took a long time, and even now when I go to the emergency room for something, I've been physically injured by doctors, and I've walked out of the hospital with torn ligaments and bruises on my body from the staff, because they did not listen to me about the stiff person syndrome or bother looking at my chart showing that I had stiff person syndrome, and they just kept thinking I was doing it on purpose, trying to get drugs, or usually they just thought it was drug seeking, even though one time I was in the hospital because I had an adverse reaction to my IVIG. So I went there via ambulance for one thing, had a stiff person attack while I was there, and left with bruises all over my body because they kept trying to hold me down. And one doctor almost broke my leg because my leg was stuck in a position that was not accommodating for them. And so he just grabbed it and shoved it up onto the table. And yeah, the doctor is no longer there, and neither are any of the nurses. So when I tried to file a complaint against them, they were like, the hospital's like, well, there's nothing we can do because they're no longer at the hospital anymore anyway. Mm-hmm. So, and now I'm kind of like red flagged anytime I go to the emergency room for anything. I get bounced around from doctor to doctor because nobody wants to deal with me because they know I'll advocate for myself. And they know that if they do something wrong or something that is unethical, I will file a complaint.
Wow. That's so scary to hear. Because, like, you'd expect medical professionals to trust you, and you trust medical professionals to help you, but in your case, it seems like they just, like, ignored you. And it sounds like medical gaslighting again, and I feel like this is a common thread I've heard in my other guests, where the doctors wouldn't believe them, and then it just started to get worse, and that's really sad to hear. And I honestly, like, before I started this podcast, I didn't realize this corruption went on in our medical system. I had more faith in it. But after hearing your experience and others like this, it's really devastating.
I lost one of my best friends because she had stiff person syndrome and several other autoimmune diseases, which most of us do end up having more than one disease. And from the time she was diagnosed, she died 3 years later. So she just recently passed away. And she had no pain management, no pain medication, and she suffered for almost a month before she finally passed away. And she was in her 20s.
Wow.
And she had so much life to live. And I promised her that I would keep advocating and that I would kind of keep the fire burning and bring more awareness to this disease and to the fact that we are not treated equally. We, you know, usually at first when you're diagnosed, like first I was ignored, then I was diagnosed. And then locally, when they found out I had the antibody in my blood, then all of a sudden they wanted to research me. Then they went from stop calling me to, okay, get your butt in here so we can study you. And then I pretty much just became something for them to write research papers about. And then I became even too complex for them. And, you know, I lost everything. I lost my ability to sing. I lost my ability to take care of myself. And my kids had to learn how to take care of me because the caregivers out here either refused to be my caregiver because my episodes look like a grand mal seizure meets The Exorcist. They're extremely scary and aggressive, and that's usually not what they sign up for. And most of them aren't medically trained. They just take a 4-hour course, and bam, they're a caregiver.
Mm-hmm. That's so sad to hear.
It's even with pain management, I'm on zero pain management. And I mean, I've broken bones during my attacks and still no pain management.
Do they still refuse to give you medications for your pain?
Yes.
Wow.
I have severe allergies to multiple medications. The only time they gave me pain medication was when I had a feeding tube. I had to have a J-tube put into my small intestine. And they gave me fentanyl because that's the only one that I'm not severely allergic to. And then the doctor sent me home with a prescription for 2 weeks worth of the fentanyl patch. And no one would refill the prescription. So then I ended up going through withdrawal, which threw me into another flare with the episodes. And then I ended up taking the feeding tube out myself at home because I went to the emergency room. I had internal bleeding the tube wasn't put in properly, but the doctor refused to take the tube out. And so I told them, well, I have a medical background. I have the supplies at home. Either you guys help me here or I'm going to go home and I'm going to take it out myself. And so I went home and I took out the feeding tube myself.
Wow, that's crazy. I don't understand how our medical professionals could ever refuse treatment like that. That's really scary. And I think in a way you were a little more fortunate to have a medical background, but imagine all the unseen cases that are going on like this, that doctor could be treating other people the same way and they just have to suffer with the tube in or continue internally bleeding because they don't know how to take it out. And that's really sad to hear.
That's one of the reasons why, you know, even though I can't sing and reach people that way, I decided to just use my voice in a different way. And my husband talked me into setting up a TikTok account. Mm-hmm. And my first video has 755,000 views. Wow. Just my first video. And now I have over 12,000 followers, which amazes mm-hmm. me. And, you know, I'm meeting people from all over the world who are just in the process of being diagnosed, or, you know, they're in treatment, or they're kind of like me where they've tried treatments and now there aren't any more treatments. And the doctors have pretty much said, well, there's nothing more that we can do for you. And we're just kind of left to figure things out and kind of left on our own. Mm-hmm. You know, it kind of feels like once you're no longer valued by them for research purposes, then there's really, then they really don't try very hard to help after that. They just say, I'm sorry, there's nothing more that we can do for you. And then you just kind of have to try and advocate for yourself or find someone to help advocate for you. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I've been in positions where I didn't have anybody there to advocate for me, and I was severely injured by doctors. Or even when I had someone that was there that was supposed to advocate for me, you know, on Christmas Eve, just left me in the hallway having an attack and left my kids to deal with the attack. And she left because she thought I was possessed. So I've had people come into the house and think that I was possessed by demons and refuse to have anything to do with me. And I've even had caregivers steal medication from my home, and I've had to call the police. And so my trust in the medical system has gone down significantly. Mm-hmm. Even with my most recent treatment, I tried doing the plasmapheresis and I got screamed at by the neurologist because she felt that I was either doctor shopping or that I had manipulated the system in order to get the plasmapheresis. But my doctor here was leaving, so I went back to the doctor in Michigan and I got his recommendation. He recommended plasmapheresis. So a neurologist here went ahead and set everything up at the hospital. But the neurologist who runs it at the hospital thought that the doctor that set everything up was going to be my new stiff person syndrome doctor. And he wasn't. He's my migraine doctor. He does my Botox. So she was furious. If I hadn't already had my central line put in, she would have actually canceled everything and sent me home, even though I'd already been cleared by insurance and it was deemed medically necessary. She eventually ended up being removed from my case because she straight up screamed at me in my room and told me I needed to just forget about the doctor in Michigan. And, you know, the only reason I was here is because of another doctor. And even in her medical notes, she put in there that I had manipulated the system in order to get there. And that's in my medical records.
Wow.
That I'm a manipulator. And, you know, it's just like the other doctor who thought I was a drug seeker. That's still in my medical records. The doctors who said it was psychosomatic, it's still in my medical records, even though it's been proven that I do have stiff person syndrome and I have the calcium channelopathy disorder. And I lost 62 pounds and I have gastroparesis, which is why I had the feeding tube put in, because my stomach does not digest food. It just kind of sits there and it causes excruciating abdominal pain. And there's nothing. It's just constant pain all the time.
Wow. Do you feel like all of this like neglect and ignorance from the doctors and like refusal of treatment, do you think it's because your condition is a little more rare? Like it's one in a million. So there's not enough education out there. Like you were saying, even your caregivers thought you were possessed by demons. Do you feel like educating more people would solve this? Or do you think societal judgment like this is just always going to exist?
Sadly, I think it's always going to exist. Because there are still people that feel like because they haven't found a genetic link or a reason why stiff person syndrome exists, that it doesn't exist. I mean, people have gone so far as to claim that stiff person syndrome is caused by cannibalism.
Wow.
Yes. When Celine Dion came out that she had stiff person syndrome, it was just nothing but trolls and, you know, people coming up with these crazy conspiracy theories as to why she developed it. So then I was losing followers and, you know, I was being treated horribly, and my fellow stiff person syndrome, you know, sisters and brothers were being treated differently because of all of this speculation and all of these crazy conspiracy theories. And it's frustrating because there's treatments that are and research that are being done in other countries. And I know people who have gone into remission, but they've had to pay $300,000, $400,000 out of pocket to get, you know, the stem cell transplant sort of thing. I was told, because they are doing those studies here where I live at the hospital, but they said there's no way that I would survive it. So I was immediately rejected because I was ignored for so many years, and that, you know, by the time we started with IVIG and then I had an adverse reaction to that and, you know, lost 40 pounds in, I don't know, 2.5, 3 months, and eventually dropped down to 90 pounds from 162. And, you know, I actually had to contact to get emergency IVIG infusion done. I had to contact them myself. And then when insurance rejected it, my doctor's office said, oh, it's going to take about 2 to 3 months in order for us to appeal it. And I was like, I'm not waiting that long. So I called and I sent in the documentation from the FDA that IVIG is a proven therapy for stiff person syndrome. And they approved my IVIG 2 hours later.
Wow.
Because I called and I advocated for myself instead of waiting for my doctor's office to do it. And I had to do that more than once.
Mm-hmm.
But the IVIG would work for a while, and then my body would reject it. And then we would try a different brand, and it would work for a while, and then my body would reject it. And then it just came to a point where, you know, the plasmapheresis, I wouldn't want to work with that neurologist again because she had already made prior judgments against me,
mm-hmm.
and she had to be removed from my case, but yet she's the only one that runs that at the hospital, you know, down the street from me. I would have to go to a different hospital, which would be fine. The only problem is that I, you know, had to be in the hospital for 10 days because my body just did not do too well with it. And I maybe made it 4 weeks before the spasms started coming back.
Mm-hmm.
And it just doing that and having to have a central line and the risk of that, not to mention I had a stroke 2 days after it happened. It just, I feel like it's not worth the risk of doing it every month for a few months, and then they want to wait and do it every 6 months.
Mm-hmm.
But there's so much risk to my body and time that I have to, that I'm taking away from my family and things that we want to do. You know, we still haven't gone camping. I need to take my kids fishing. There's things that, you know, that I still have to do. And, you know, my older girls, I missed out on a lot because they left. And so they didn't really see how severe it got. And, you know, they couldn't handle it. My younger kids, they've only known me as sick. And so even for them, they're kind of starting to understand how sick I am. But they've learned how to turn on my oxygen machine. They know how to use my pulse oximeter. They know how to check my blood pressure because my blood pressure will shoot up really, really high. I'll stop breathing. And, you know, that's super scary.
Mm-hmm. Especially for, like, a young child to see.
Yeah. And it's difficult that they had to learn that mm-hmm. because the caregivers are not qualified enough to even give me my emergency medication to stop an attack. So I would need to have one of my kids home. Otherwise, they're just going to call 911. And then I'm going to have to deal with 911. And I don't, you know, mm-hmm. they know my house. Even when I had an attack, when I went to go get my son's hair cut, the guy recognized me and he's like, "Don't you have that stiff man thing and live down the street?" And I'm like, "Yep, that's me." So they all know who I am. And for some people, they want to learn about it.
Mm-hmm.
They wanted to learn about it before Celine Dion came out, that, you know, she's kind of the celebrity face of stiff person syndrome. But people, you know, there's those of us that don't have access to the type of medical care that she has, or even the type of medical care that I have through my husband's insurance because he has a good job. There are people that are just, that are suffering and are dying and being ignored.
Mm-hmm.
And some families are finding out after the person passed away that they had stiff person syndrome, and that's just not right.
Yeah. Do you feel like free healthcare would benefit you? And have you talked to like others with different person syndrome in like Australia and Europe who have free healthcare? Do you think that they have like an advantage over someone in America?
So yes, actually, I've met people from all over the world who get free healthcare, who have done the transplants. Their medical care is totally taken care of. When they go to the hospital, they're treated with respect. The bedside manner, I've seen some of their videos, is amazing. And I feel like they're not judged as harshly, and they're given more opportunities to live a good quality of life. That's all we're asking for. We just want to be treated with respect and have a quality of life where we can still feel like we're living and not just existing.
Yeah, that's, I feel like we should have free healthcare in that way, because it also gives the opportunity for people to get second opinions without worrying about how much it's going to cost. And as you said, it seems like the people there have more respect with the free healthcare too, which I think it's something that our medical system, we need to address that as a country.
Oh, definitely. Free healthcare, and for some reason, I don't understand why some people get into the medical industry just to say, I'm sorry, but you're too complex for me. And, you know, I just don't want to deal with, you know, your situation. And I've heard that many times. I'm sorry, but you're just too complex for me. And so what do I tell my kids? That, you know, mom might not make it to your 16th birthday because this doctor says I'm too complex, or they just don't want to touch me. And they say, go to this specialist. And I'm like, I've already been there. That's who I'm seeing, but they're too far away. You know, I had to travel over 2,000 miles, and I was doing it every 3 months so I could continue getting my IVIG. I did that for a year. And it's insane, because I shouldn't have to do that, and I shouldn't have to fight so hard to get medical care and get somebody, like, unless I'm actively dying, my insurance will not pay for a nurse.
Wow.
And so unless, like, I'm in palliative care, which, you know, is one step above hospice. Mm-hmm. I won't get a nurse until I reach hospice stage, which for me is ridiculous. Because that means no pain management whatsoever. It means that there's no one there to, you know, to help me with my oxygen, or to make sure that I get to the doctors. You know, they're so strict that I can't even get transportation out of my county with the insurance, because the insurance only covers transportation within the county. If I have a caregiver, they're only allowed so many miles a month that they can use to transport me. And my primary doctor is 42 miles away. And so just one trip to go there for one of my doctors, and I have four in Seattle. And so just one trip to one doctor's appointment, and they're already pretty much maxed out on their monthly allowance for gas. And that is ridiculous.
That is. It seems like also the doctors are just treating you as like a condition and not as a person, which, that's crazy. Combined with the insurance policies, I didn't even know those existed. Like the certain number of miles that you can travel. That's like, what if someone has a doctor that's like 100 miles away and is in desperate need of attention at that moment?
Yeah, so when I can't drive, or I mean, even something as simple as putting in a wheelchair ramp so I can use my motorized wheelchair. I've been unable to do that because my landlord will not let me put in a wheelchair ramp, which technically is illegal. But we're in a position where we can't move, and you know, because moving is expensive, it's ridiculously expensive, and so we just kind of deal with it, and I can at least use my motorized wheelchair downstairs when I can get downstairs. I have a very close relationship with my stairs because I've fallen down them so many times. But I don't even like going to the doctor for it because, one, I might not have transportation there unless I take an ambulance, which means my kids aren't going to have somebody here to watch them. And then I have people who are saying I shouldn't even have my children, that I'm traumatizing my children by exposing them to my disease. And I've had people even call CPS because they felt that my attacks were traumatizing my children.
I'm so sorry. That is not acceptable.
It's people abuse the system, and it's some people just don't want to understand. And there's even doctors who just don't. They don't want to understand. They don't want to do the research to find out. They're like, oh, wow, this must be really new. No, it was discovered in the 1980s. Mm-hmm. It's not a new disease. It's just now more people are talking about it. Yeah. And because, you know, since Celine Dion came out, I've been in an article with a few other people. I had someone contact me from Africa, and they did a documentary on me, kind of one of those short documentaries that you see for like scene stories on Instagram. Mm-hmm. And I reached probably over 1 million people with that documentary, and then I've reached over 1 million people with my TikTok, and then Celine Dion put me in her music video for her movie.
Wow.
Her lyric music video. Mm-hmm. So when I was in the hospital, getting my plasmapheresis done, I found out that they were looking for people who would support Celine Dion in her struggles. And so I went ahead and one of the nurses helped me, and I, you know, made up a sign and everything and sent it in. And 8 days later, the music video gets released. And at the end of the music video, after they're done showing pictures, my picture is the last one that they show. And it means a lot to me because it's a way of raising awareness, and it's Celine Dion. Yeah. I used to sing her songs in singing competitions, and now to have been chosen to be in the lyric music video for her movie was huge. And so
that's so
cool.
And you're able to
go ahead.
you're able to advocate for others who may not have the same opportunity to share their voice. And I think that's really cool because you're inspiring others with stiff person syndrome and just any condition in general, that you're kind of telling them that they have the power to make a change and have a voice too, which I find really inspiring.
Well, thank you. I feel like sometimes we give too much power to the medical system. We give too much power to the doctors to determine what is right and what is best for us. Mm-hmm. And I decided to take that power back because, you know, I'm sick of losing my friends and seeing people struggle. And I know people who didn't show their attacks until they saw me show my attacks because they were worried and there are other people, because mine affects my entire body. Some people, it just affects their torso or their legs or their arms. Mine affects my entire body. And, you know, it contorts me into all kinds of positions, and I tear muscles and I break bones, and you know, I broke two of my toes last week during an attack. And, you know, it's just, imagine just watching your own body and watching your own bones break and not being able to do anything about
that
it.
That must be so...
And then having... Yeah, it's...
Yeah. What triggers a flare like this? Is it just random, or is there like a stimulus that would just make it worse?
So, cold is a huge trigger. So is sound. Pretty much anything that can startle you, startle the system, fire truck, car alarm going off, even something as simple as being touched and not knowing that the person is going to touch you and it startling your system, can cause things to lock up, or even just stretching. Your body's natural reaction when you wake up in the morning is to stretch. If I do that, my muscles and everything will completely lock up, and I could be stuck like that for hours until somebody sees me, unless I can get to my emergency medicine, which I always keep some in a necklace around my neck, because I never know when it will happen. And sometimes I'll get, similar to migraine auras, I'll get like a hot flash. I'll start sweating profusely, and then my heart rate will jump up, and like it'll go from, I don't know, 60 to like 140, like just like that. And then I'll know that I'm getting ready to have an attack. And having them in public is the hardest part, because some people are compassionate and they'll ask you if you're okay or how they can help. And I've had other people assume that I was a drug addict going through withdrawals and wouldn't go anywhere near me.
Wow. Well, you already mentioned how people think that it's like a demon possession, or as you just said, like drug usage. Are there any other misconceptions about stiff person syndrome or the attacks that like annoy you that you want to address?
Mostly just that some people think that it is still just in our heads, and that it is a psychological disorder, even though there is testing to confirm it. They just don't want to understand it, because maybe they're healthy, or they think you're just doing it for attention, or they think you're doing it for money. Even if you haven't asked people for a dime, they still just assume that it's for attention, and, you know, or they just want somebody to pick on at the moment and find something wrong, even when you're trying to do everything right.
Yeah, and I feel like a lot of people, like especially in the older generation, try to dismiss all neurological conditions into anxiety or depression and kind of make it seem like it's nothing just because they don't understand what's going on. And I find that really sad, because I think it's our generation's responsibility to raise more awareness for these conditions so we can like get rid of that stigma that everything's just psychological.
I agree with that, because anxiety is a trigger for stiff person attacks, and a lot of us do suffer from depression because our body is attacking itself. And during the stiff attacks, you're going through some of the worst pain fathomable. And it's one of the most excruciating diseases that you can have. And I have chronic regional pain syndrome on top of it. So there's really no pain medicine that can touch either one of them. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I stopped with trying with, because I have a background in Eastern and complementary medicine. So I stopped with the, you know, with today's medicine and all of the pills and try this medication and mm-hmm. try this medication. And they were just causing horrible flares or horrible allergic reactions that would throw me into flares for months, or they would send me into a severe depression or psychosis. And I was just like, I can't do this anymore to my body, to my family, to my kids, to myself. And so I just said, okay, I'm going to stop. So I stopped doing a lot of the testing, extra testing that they wanted to do. They wanted to study me at the Mayo Clinic in Minnesota, but they wanted me to pay for it.
Wow.
And I'm like, no, I'm not going to go there and be your guinea pig. Mm-hmm. So you can finish writing your, apparently they'd already started writing a medical journal about me. And so they wanted me to come there so that they could study me, but they wanted me to foot the bill and pay for the hotel and pay for all of the fees. And I'm like, no, what world do you think we live in where just anybody can afford? I'm not working. I can't work. And so how am I supposed to afford to travel there for up to 2 weeks so you guys can study me?
Yeah, that's crazy.
That just doesn't...
Yeah, they should have paid you, if anything.
Right?
And I know you mentioned acupuncture and that you're trying to reduce like your use on Western medicine. And coming from like an Indian background, Ayurvedic medicine is like pretty common. Like my parents, my friends and family use it. And I know acupuncture is like a part of alternative medicine. Do you personally prefer alternative medicine over Western medicine? And are there any benefits you've seen from acupuncture?
Yes, I prefer alternative medicine over Western medicine because I was a massage therapist for 10 years. Mm-hmm. And so I worked in the medical field with injuries, and I saw the benefits of what massage therapy can do, even from helping people with infertility to helping people with severe injuries and helping their nerves regenerate faster. I did shiatsu, acupressure. I even taught for a couple of semesters. And acupuncture, thankfully, you know, I guess the good thing about being in the hospital for 10 days is I met my annual deductible, so I can have as many acupuncture sessions as I want for the rest of the year. Mm-hmm. So I had one on Monday, and then I have another one on tomorrow morning. And I have found that is far more beneficial to me for my migraines, for my back pain, even though I do get Botox for my migraines and for dystonia in my neck. Mm-hmm. Acupuncture, I always feel more revitalized afterwards. Mm-hmm. I feel like I have more energy, and it helps my muscles to relax. And if I could do it every single day, I would. But she's too booked up for that.
What does Botox do specifically?
So the Botox essentially deadens temporarily the nerves in my forehead, my scalp, and the back of my neck, and then they'll do it in my traps, like in my shoulders and on the side of my shoulder blades. And what that does is it relaxes the nerves, or essentially stops them from reacting to stress triggers or things like light, which is a huge trigger for me for migraines. And I have hemiplegic migraines, which it doesn't help with, but those cause paralysis on like one side of my body. It doesn't really help so much with that, but it does help with the other migraines a bit. But there are risks to it. There's risks of infection, there's risks of it getting into the bloodstream. But I've been doing it long enough to where I haven't had too much of an issue. There was one time where too much was given in the back of my neck, and I could not hold my head up. So I had to wear a foam collar around my neck to hold my head up because too much was given in my neck, and the muscles couldn't hold it up. And yeah, so it kind of is supposed to kind of deaden the area for a short period of time. You get it done about every 3 months to help. And if I could get it done in most more of my muscles, I would do that, but I haven't found anyone to do the injections for anything other than my migraines and for some of the dystonia in my neck. And that's only because I ask them to, because there's always a little bit extra after they're done doing my face and my scalp, so and my neck. So I always ask them if they could do a couple of trigger point areas in my shoulders and my scapula.
Yeah, I didn't know Botox could be used for that cause. I only thought it was cosmetic, but that's good to hear that there's like other ways instead of just Western medicine, Botox, the acupuncture to treat these, so you don't have to rely on like the doctors. You can go to like a separate person, which is nice.
Well, and usually for the Botox, you have to see a like either a pain clinic or a migraine specialist who does the Botox. So you still have to go to usually a neurologist. But the thing about Botox is you have to, it took me 2 years of going through other medications that insurance requires you to try. You have to try different medications from different classes. And if those don't work out, then you can get the Botox. So you have to jump through all of these hoops before you can get Botox, even though it's been proven to be one of the safest and one of the most effective treatments for migraines.
Wow, that's a lot of hoops to jump over to just get the same treatment. Wow. Are there any activities that you can't do now with stiff person syndrome or like food you can't eat? And how have you just accommodated these changes to your lifestyle?
Wow, there's a lot of things I can't do anymore. Well, one activity is I can't perform anymore. I can't really sing. I'll do little things here, sing happy birthday and stuff like that when I can. And sometimes my voice will come back for a little bit, and then I can't, talk or anything for days. But I still do jam sessions with my kids when I can, even if it's in my bedroom. But cooking, something that I used to love to do, is something that I'm very much restricted on because I can't stand long enough to do it. I can't even stand long enough to take a shower. And I have to be monitored to take a bath because I've almost drowned twice. And so I need help down the stairs. to get downstairs to get to my wheelchair, but my wheelchair is not high enough, you know, to really reach the stove. And I've damaged my arms so much that my shoulders are frozen. And so cooking is something I can't really do anymore. You know, go outside doing yard work or being on the trampoline. You know, sometimes something as simple as being able to sit at one of my kids' choir performances, in going to concerts, which I used to do all the time, which I did do this last year, but we went to go see 21 Pilots, and during their finale, there was fireworks, and the fireworks set me off, and so I was, while everybody else was screaming for the fireworks, I was screaming because I was in absolute agony, and my son was trying to cover me so people wouldn't stare, and I had to be carried out by security after the concert was done. But even something, you know, that's a tradition, you know, with each kid's birthday, we go to dinner and we go to a movie. And sometimes if the movie is too loud or if something happens that scares me, I always have to worry. And so it's, you know, going for hikes, going swimming, something that I absolutely used to love. Even now, just, you know, trying to make it to the other end of the house so I can use the regular restroom, I can't do. So I've had to remodel pretty much my room into a hospital room / hotel room. So I have a bedside toilet, my oxygen machine, a microwave, a mini refrigerator, a coffee maker, and, you know, my bed that I can adjust. And I've had to purchase everything myself because we submitted it through insurance and insurance never did anything. And so, like, my safety railing, you know, that I added to my bed, you know, I had to pay for all of that. And so sometimes it's like I never get to leave the room. So I had a mural up on my wall, and, you know, it's of a waterfall during the sunset with the ocean. And I put that up before things got really bad, and I'm glad I did, because it makes me feel like I'm not just stuck in this room most of the time. And we're trying to get out more. You know, we just all went on our first ferry ride like a week ago, and for my son's birthday, you know, we traveled to Wyoming. I went on my first, you know, water slide with my son, and then my brother was there, and he was able to, they both, you know, caught me, and my brother, you know, carried me out and, you know, set me into the waiting area. And, you know, so there's things that I've pushed myself a bit too far. You know, the ferry ride and everything else, I did end up having an attack that night, because, you know, I pushed myself too much. But I feel like I have to, because I spent too much time being stuck in this bed and being told what I could and could not do by doctors. And I let that get in my head, and it caused a lot of severe depression and anxiety, to the point where I don't even like going to the grocery store. I can't go near the frozen food section because something as simple as getting cold in the dairy section could set me off. And then I've got to hurry up and try and hide, in order, you know, and have my attack and hope that, you know, people don't freak out, or, you know, I'm scared of scaring children and stuff like that, you know, for people who don't understand what's going on. And so I used to go to karaoke, and I used to be in a band. I used to perform, and I worked with producers and had an album and music videos and stuff like that. And I went from being able to jam out and run around on stage to barely being able to make it 3 feet from my bed.
I'm so sorry.
Without assistance.
Yeah, these like changes that you'd have to make, they sound really like hard to do, because there's like, they're like everyday activities that people just take for granted, but it seems like really hard to have to change all of this. But I'm glad you're like dictating your own life, like going on the ferry ride and the water slide, to not let like the negativity discourage you. And I think that's really important too, that you're kind of pushing yourself, not to the point where like you're having the flares, but like trying to dictate your own life and also be there with your kids. But I'm really sorry, like when you have a flare, you not only have to worry about your own body, but like how other people might perceive it. And I feel like the societal judgment is just going to keep staying, because it's really hard to educate everyone. And even with education, there's always ignorance. Like, people are always going to think. And it's something that, unfortunately, like, as much as we try, I don't think it's something that can permanently be changed.
I agree with that, because there's always going to be people where, unless they are in your shoes, their ignorance is just, it's going to stay there. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's sad. I've had my neighbors, literally, when I'd had an attack, and I fell on the ice, and she literally just drove around me so that she wouldn't run me over and just left me in the road.
That's crazy.
Instead of getting out of her car, asking if I was okay, she just drove around me. And that hurts, mm-hmm. because but then there's the amazing people, the people that give me faith in humanity, you know, during my plasmapheresis, the nurse that helped me with the papers, my nurse who knew exactly how I liked my coffee and knew that I loved apple pie and made sure to save apple pie for me. And he always had we called it our favorite things, you know, mm-hmm. like the song, these are a few of my favorite things. And, you know, it's the people like that who help me when it comes to, you know, the faith in humanity, you know, having an attack at the Rite Aid pharmacy and having the pharmacist and a woman who was there just for the day. She was just filling in. And they went and got everything for me, and they stayed with me, and they were unbelievably compassionate. They got my emergency medicine out of my necklace for me, and they stayed with me for the entire thing.
Yeah.
It's people like that, and people like you and your generation that seem so much more understanding, and they have so much compassion rather than judgments. I've noticed a lot more of the trolls that I see on my page are sadly people of my generation or, you know, older generations. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I've had some people say, you know, older generations, and some people say, you know, when it comes to diseases like yours, you know, it's terminal. There's nothing that can cure it. So, you know, why would I bother donating for this cause or for research for this cause when you're just going to die anyway?
Wow. That's really sad. I can't believe people would say that too. But I feel like we need more people in the medical field who are like that pharmacist and that nurse who like remembered your favorite things. Because I feel like those are the people who go into the medical field with good intentions and the right intentions to help someone. While the other people, like the neurologist who screamed at you, they don't have the right intentions to even go into medicine, which I don't understand why you'd go into medicine if you don't truly want to help people. And if you want to yell at people, like, that's not the right job for you. Being a neurologist, you're supposed to show compassion. And being a doctor, you're supposed to be humble, so you're supposed to help people, which the neurologist clearly didn't seem to do. But the pharmacist and the nurses you were talking about, I feel like those are the people that we need more in medicine to help people with disabilities.
Absolutely. And a lot of us with disabilities, we don't qualify for assistance. So there's, you know, with MS, because I go to the MS Immunology Center out here, there are a lot of programs for people with MS, whether it be, you know, assistance with wheelchair accessible vehicles. I do not have one. I cannot afford one. There are no grant programs or anything like that for people with stiff person syndrome. There's a lot of programs for people with MS that are not offered to people with stiff person syndrome. And I think that needs to change. That just because we are rare doesn't mean that we should be kind of shoved aside as if our lives don't matter, and that, you know, once the research is done on us, that if we don't fall into a certain box, that we are then no longer relevant and we're just kind of left at home to suffer and find our own way out, or find someone familiar with the disease to help advocate for us. Mm-hmm. You know, it's frustrating. You know, I'm allowed 16 pills a month to stop my attacks. 16. That's it. And sometimes it takes 2 pills to stop an attack. And so if I'm having 4 or 5 attacks that are lasting hours long a week, I'm going to run out of that medication. Mm-hmm. And insurance is not going to approve another refill, because they'll only approve a certain amount. They won't give me pain medication because they said there's too much of a risk of accidental overdose. And it's like, okay, but what about people that I know who have pain pumps, who live in other countries, who have pain pumps for not only the muscle spasms, so they have muscle relaxers, but they also have pain pumps to manage their pain so that they can live more of a full and active life. Those are things that aren't given to us. I know people here in the States that are on pain medication. I am not allowed to be on pain medication. And, you know, so that's why with alternative medicine, that kind of became my, that became a big outlet for me. Mm-hmm. Especially after going through withdrawal of so many different medications that they would put me on. And some of them they would put me on an antidepressant that is supposed to help with muscle spasms, you know, but I have severe allergies to, you know, multiple types of antidepressants that actually cause suicidal thoughts. And doctors would keep putting me on these medications when they just weren't reading that I've already had multiple allergic reactions, severe allergic reactions to pain medication, where you know, they knew I was allergic to morphine, but they decided to go ahead and give me something 7 times stronger, and it almost killed me. They gave me Dilaudid, and I immediately went into anaphylaxis, and they almost had to intubate me. And I immediately passed out because I couldn't breathe. Wow. And, you know, it's like, why, if it already states that I have allergies to all of these opiates, why would you give me one of the strongest ones possible? But then when there's one that we know works for me, that helped me when I had my feeding tube, they wouldn't let me use it. And so even with broken bones and tendons and everything, I'll go to the ER. They'll give me an anti-inflammatory. I usually don't even ask for pain medication. They'll give me an anti-inflammatory and send me home. And it's like, I can take an anti-inflammatory at home. Mm-hmm. You know, I can use CBD cream. I can do an Epsom salt bath, or I have magnesium spray, you know, that I could spray and have my husband massage into my muscles or something like that. Or I can take ibuprofen, you know, if I really need to, but my body doesn't absorb anything. And so now I'm also on B12 shots that I have to give myself every week because I was bleeding so heavily in the hospital. And they didn't bother to check the fact that my B12 was so severely low that none of my organs were getting enough oxygen. And it was my primary care doctor ran my labs and was like, you're like stage 3 B12 deficiency, which means he's like, your B12 has been low for such a long time that your brain has not been getting enough oxygen. You're not getting enough oxygen in your red blood cells, and it's not being sent to the rest of your body. So I've been going through horrible symptoms, and some of it was related to something as simple as B12. I was taking supplements, but we already know my body doesn't absorb it because of the damage to my stomach and my GI system. It does not absorb nutrients. So now I'm doing the shots where I have to do it myself. And I still have a medical port in my chest where if I need to get that flushed so that it doesn't get clogged, I would have to go to the emergency room to get it flushed. Because I never learned how to do it myself. They almost took it out. I had to fight with the hospital the last time when I was there for my plasmapheresis. I threw a fit because they kept saying that it was clogged and they were going to take it out. And I was like, no, you're not. You're not going to take that out of my body unless we know for sure that there's nothing wrong with it. And so instead of me going down, you know, for the surgery to have it removed, they sent the radiologist upstairs and he accessed it the first time that he tried accessing it, and he was able to flush it. But I had gone through one lady who said she had 35 years experience and that if she couldn't access it, that it couldn't be accessible. And she wasn't accessing my port. She was hitting my rib cage. She wasn't anywhere near my port. She was hitting my rib cage. This woman with 35 years experience.
That's really sad. And what makes it sadder is you advocated for yourself. So you got the necessary, you didn't get the pump port removed. But there's like so many other people that she would have just dismissed since they didn't advocate for themselves. And also, I feel like every doctor you've talked about, like all the bad ones, just tried discouraging you from advocating for yourself. And you're like, you advocating is what made the difference. And that's like the reason why you got the port, like you still have the port and stuff like that, because you advocate for yourself. And that's really sad to think about the people who can't maybe have, like, aphasia and can't advocate for themselves or don't have someone else to support them. I feel like that's, well, that's messed up, our medical system.
Right. I wonder how many people actually had their ports removed because of her opinion, because she was the best and she had all this experience. And it made me wonder how many people had their port removed when it didn't need to be.
Yeah, she just sounded like arrogant at that point. That's sorry.
Yes.
Okay, so switching topics, you have, you said you have a TikTok and you also have an Instagram. What message are you trying to convey when you're advocating for others with stiff person syndrome?
Normally, when I'm advocating for other people or people who reach out to me, it is just to keep holding on and to speak up for yourself. And if you can't, because it is so hard, and it took me years to even advocate for myself because I wanted to trust the doctors and the medical system because I didn't know very much about this disease. And, you know, I tell them to just keep fighting. That's why I always address everyone as "Hello, my warriors," because that is what we are. We are warriors. We are literally fighting for our lives, and our voice is sometimes the only thing that we are going to have. And so I've been a part of something called the Voices of Stiff Person Syndrome, where it's other people like myself who tell their stories about their experiences with stiff person syndrome. And then similar podcasts done by someone with stiff person syndrome where they have just smaller stories where people can talk about their experiences. And there were people who before they met me had never posted a video. They were scared because they were worried about judgment, and they were worried that they weren't going to have a support system around them. And sometimes it takes time to find people, but it's amazing when you find people from all around the world who reach out and they're needing someone to help them, someone during their darkest times when the depression hits or when they realize that this is terminal and the doctors won't help them or won't listen to them. We have to stick together and we have to keep the fire burning. We can't let the fire blow out. We can't let the negativity and the conspiracies and what other people are saying get us down or make us even doubt ourselves or even our own worth. Because I've been there and I've attempted to take my life because it got so bad. And I let the trolls get to me, and I was told so many times that you're traumatizing your children and your children would be better off with somebody else. And I let that get to me. And I knew immediately that, you know, my son walked into the room and I told him to go get his dad. And, you know, we went to the hospital, and luckily I didn't take enough medication for it to cause any permanent damage. But it was, I lost friends because of that, close friends, because they felt that I was weak or that I was giving up and that I was being selfish. But it's not, when your body is literally tearing itself apart and you feel like bricks are being stacked one on top of the other on your chest. It's horrendous, and no one wants to suffer like that. And when I was in school, I picked someone who, she was kind of an inspiration to me because I reached out to her, but she used to be an instructor, and she was an actress. She did theater. And so what she decided to do is she decided to do a show called Stiff. And it was her own way of putting a spin on stiff person syndrome, and, you know, and talked about the struggles of having to move in with her mother-in-law and, you know, moving with the kids and it changing her life and, you know, being pretty much immobile from the neck down. And it hits most of us in our 30s, but now they're finding it in younger children because there's more awareness being done. Children as young as 5 and 6 years old. And so that's why we have to keep advocating. And I've had people reach out to me in their darkest moments who've wanted to take their lives. And I answered in time. And I think to myself, what if I hadn't answered in time? You know, if they hadn't had some, because they didn't have somebody else to reach out to that understood what they were going through. And so I'm always honest, sometimes to a fault. And, you know, a lot of people say, why do you always show the bad? Why do you always show the attacks? Why don't you show more of the happier things, the happier times? And it's like, I do. They're there. You have to look for it. I have my performances. I have me singing, you know, before things got really bad. I have me being active at the beach and Legoland and, you know, stuff like that. Even though I was still in my wheelchair, you know, I have my bucket list of things to do. It's just some people choose to look at certain videos versus other videos. And I've noticed that there are some people that are fascinated with watching my videos because it's something they've never seen before. Mm-hmm. And it's scary for some people. Some people cannot watch it. And, you know, I've had some people tell me that I've traumatized them by them watching the videos. And it's like, this is our reality. And when Chelsea died, you know, we made a promise, you know, that from her last breath that I would take over and I would make sure that people were not gaslighted the way that she was, and the way that so many other people are. And I made a promise to myself that I wouldn't give up on myself and that I would try to be better and do better and try and, you know, I spent so much energy as well helping other people, but I forgot to help myself for a while. And so I had to leave social media for a little while so that I could focus on myself and my family, because I became so deeply involved in everything that was going on social media that I needed to take my own mental health break. And, a lot of people understood that and were compassionate about it. And it's nice when you come back and people show that, either they were, I don't want people to be concerned, but for them to show that compassion and to show that understanding is, it makes it that much more important for me to maintain my voice and not lose it.
And I think it's important that you're showing like the real side of stiff person syndrome and not sugarcoating it on social media. So others with the condition too can feel like they have a voice and they can be more comfortable too. Because I see a lot of influencers sugarcoat illnesses and it just makes people believe that their illness isn't like what it's supposed to be. So like another person with stiff person syndrome can actually see the true side of having it and be more comfortable with their condition themselves. And also, I feel like it calls into attention the illness by demonstrating like the severity. So lawmakers and medical staff can kind of understand what you're going through, although they could never feel the pain, but see that the illness is so severe that they need to make a change in how they approach treating it and also like maybe direct more research towards the condition. And I also wanted to say I find it really inspiring how you're using your voice to help so many people. You probably save so many lives by just reaching out and posting on your platforms. And I just want you to remember that everyone will always support you. And I find it inspiring that you remain positive despite all the negativity surrounding you.
Thank you. That means a lot. And I feel like I owe it to my kids, and I owe it to Chelsea and the other Chelseas out there who are struggling right now, and or the families who've lost loved ones and still follow me, to make sure that I'm okay, and or caregivers and family members who take care of, their spouse and things like that, who didn't post until they saw that I was posting, and it gave them that much more, I guess. It made them feel more comfortable to do it themselves and not worry so much about the judgments and to show everyone their reality. Because, even for family members, I do not see very often because either it was hard for them to see me sick or, it's just something they don't understand, and they just don't understand how I could be so sick, and why I would be blessed with six children just to get this horrible disease that will most likely take me away from them, before my youngest meets her 16th birthday. But I don't like going by what the doctors say because they told me after my first child was born that I wouldn't be able to have any more children. And if it wasn't for Eastern medicine, kicking my body into gear, it might have been true, but now the doctors were wrong. I'd been told to terminate pregnancies, and the doctors were wrong. My last pregnancy, they told me I wouldn't survive, the baby wouldn't survive. They were wrong because she's beautiful and she's 7 years old, and she's, they're all my miracles. And I am confident that no matter when I go, I have something to leave behind for them. I have my songs that I've recorded. I have my music videos that I've recorded. I have, you know, the articles that I've been in. And I mean, Celine Dion's music video is a pretty huge deal. Mm-hmm. You know, even they know who Celine Dion is, at their young ages, because I make them listen to all genres of music. Mm-hmm. But you know, it's, I want to make sure that I work on my bucket list and spend time with them and be there as much as I can for every concert, every, you know, drill team, step team, you know, every performance that I can possibly go to, even if it means wearing earplugs or noise canceling headphones. And I don't care, you know, how people look at me if I'm in a wheelchair or in a cane. I'm still going to rock it in a wheelchair. I'm still going to rock it walking in a cane. And I'm going to be with my babies and with my family. And I'm going to do things my way, because it's my body and it's my life that I'm living. And I think that if a lot of us were allowed to do things our way, we wouldn't be so sick, or we wouldn't be so depressed, and we would have more control over our own bodies rather than leaving everything up to our very, very crappy medical system that we have mm-hmm. in this country.
Yeah, I think you'll always have a permanent impact on a lot of us. And personally, from this conversation, I will hold this conversation in my head. Like, I won't forget it when I go into the medical field. I want to be a doctor too. And this really has shown me the dark side of our medical system. And it's something that I, as a medical professional, want to fix. And I want to have a role in making others with neurological illnesses feel more comfortable and feel more understood. I don't want to make anyone feel like they're not being listened to or gaslighted. So I think your experiences have really shown me something, and they'll have a lasting impact on anyone who hears them.
Thank you. And I admire you at your age. I have a daughter who's going to be a junior this next year, and I admire at such a young age that you would take on something like neurological diseases, and especially rare ones, and giving us the opportunity and giving us a voice. And it gives me so much hope for your generation and for, you know, the future of the medical system and our healthcare system, that there are going to be for my children, because my boys have neuromuscular disorders. And, you know, it gives me hope that when my kids get older, that they're going to be treated completely differently than the way I was treated for so many years. And you help give me hope, and you inspire me. And I think what you are doing is absolutely amazing, and you should be so proud of yourself, and your family should be unbelievably proud of you. And I hope to follow you and follow your career as you, because I have a feeling that you are going to be a trailblazer, and you're going to not do things by the book, that you're going to make changes. And this is an amazing way to start, and I'm honored to be a part of that that passion and that you have, and the path that you have to go into the medical field, and I think you're going to do amazing.
Thank you so much. That means so much to me. Well, thank you for being on my podcast. I learned so much from our conversation, and as I said, this is something I'll forever remember. And just thank you.
You're so very welcome, and thank you. And it's been an honor, and just we're both going to keep doing our thing, and we're going to keep on trucking.
Yeah.
Because you're also a warrior. And so we're sisters now.
Yeah.